And just like that, we're back, my friends. Welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. And we're coming to you live again on YouTube. Hope you guys have been enjoying that. It's getting some comments on there. We're getting some views. The YouTube platform, the main reason we're making sure we're staying on again for like the fourth time, it's just for the fact that it's the largest podcast platform in the entire world, and it's great outlets to get the truth out there, to get the real news out there.
Yeah, but you can't even watch us on YouTube unless you're a member of YouTube. They don't even bring us up.
Really?
No, they bring little snippets of the
show.
Well,
that's why I'm watching the show. It's awful. We were getting a bunch of growth the last like 2 weeks, and then over the last like week, we completely like got shadow banned.
Well, they shadow banned us again.
Everything got capped.
So now, unless you're willing to sign up and register for YouTube,
they're not even showing us.
You can't even find us anymore. I knew that's going to happen, though.
Fantastic.
Now they're using us to build their database.
Well, yeah, and that's another reason too, guys. Why I tell you guys on the front page, we've got the podcast news platform. No matter what, this is on its own private server. This is completely independent. YouTube doesn't run it. Nobody runs it except for us and our marketing team. So this is always going to stay up and ready and rock and roll. But make sure if you are on YouTube,
unless they spike us.
Yeah, this got a lot of parameters, but firewalls behind it though. It's like, you know, we got a moat with gators in it, with another wall behind it, with another wall of snakes behind it.
I've got a funny story to tell you when you finish this intro.
Okay, so be sure check this out on the podcast, and also be sure to check us out on the YouTube platform. Again, if you like it, subscribe, put some comments on there, stay active on it. At least try to keep the algorithm going so we can make it run and make YouTube happen. And the only reason we keep doing this, guys, is for you and expand our listeners to get more people with the knowledge that they need to essentially grow and stay healthy.
Well, we want to help as many people as we can.
That's exactly right.
But Ziegler told a story one time of a Texas oil billionaire that had 1,000 wells on his property, had 1 million acres in Texas.
Yeah.
The guy was a billionaire, and he had one daughter. One daughter, only one daughter, and he's going to give up her hand in marriage. As he sent out a memo to all of his friends and all the people and said, I want everybody to meet here because I'm going to give my daughter away and give her hand in marriage. And I guess she didn't have much of a say-so in this.
I was about to say.
It's one of Ziegler's stories, and he probably is going to do a much better job telling it than I am. And so, sure enough, you know, 1,000 guys show up.
Yeah.
And he has an Olympic pool. And he had the forethought to stock it with crocodiles and alligators and venomous pit vipers and every type
water moccasins.
Water moccasins, anacondas, you know, everything. This whole thing's filled with reptiles.
Olympic pool.
I mean, it's churning with fins and scales.
30-foot long anacondas.
Oh, yeah. And he goes, what I'm going to do, the first person who jumps in that pool and swims all the way the length of the pool and comes up the other side alive, gets my daughter hand in marriage, or I'm going to give him 500,000 acres of oil fields. Either or. Now, remember, I only have one daughter. I have no children except for my daughter. And she's going to inherit everything that I own. So if you're willing to do it, you will basically get everything. All of a sudden, splash it. Almost immediately, with the emergence of another wet guy soaked out, swam across the pool in an all-time Olympic record. Made it. Comes up on the other side. And he's dripping wet and shaking. He's got adrenaline going through him. And the guy goes, I can't believe you did this. What do you want? You want the hand of my daughter in marriage? You want all this land? What do you want? He goes, I want to know the name of the guy who pushed me in the pool. Ziegler tells it much better than I did. By the way, I was right. Austin was right. It's a funny story, a funny joke. But Fauci has now invoked the Fifth Amendment in a hearing before Rand Paul. We told you a month ago, this is exactly what he's going to do. And here's why. He goes, my attorneys have advised me that I should take the Fifth Amendment and not speak to you guys.
Yep, I knew that. He had to show up.
No,
he could get tipped.
Yep.
Yeah, they'd indict him. So he had to show up. But I guarantee you, he had probably a whole fleet of attorneys that walked in with him. I guarantee you don't say anything. No, what's your name? I don't recall.
The only person I ever saw who actually got through all that and did it right was the guy from the Aviator movie. The billionaire guy from the 1970s, 60s, 40s, well, Howard Hughes. He appeared before this. He basically chewed everybody out. He said, if my giant goose plane doesn't fly, I will leave the United States never to be seen again. And he took that thing up. He flew it. I'd love to go see that plane. I think it's up in Oregon somewhere. Flying boat.
And now it says here, basically his response was, you can tell he had this well planned out, although it pains me to do so, because the respect I have for the legislative branch for the government and my decades-long record of cooperating with Congress under the advice of my attorneys, I'm invoking my right under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution to refrain from answering your questions.
Because he had a blanket pardon that was retroactive, not going into the future.
Now, the flip side of that, though, and I don't know how this is going to... It says, federal law makes it a crime for a person who's subpoenaed by Congress to refuse to answer any questions pertinent to the question under inquiry. Fauci, who is appearing pursuant to the subpoena issued by the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs, could face misdemeanor charges under the law.
Misdemeanor is better than a felony.
That's exactly right.
And I remember I told Roger Stone, I was having dinner with him, and he'd gotten basically indicted and was going to go to prison for like 4 or 5 years, and they raided his house in the middle of the night, and I was having dinner with him at Mancow down in Miami, and I told him he got a pardon from Trump, and he was scheduled to go before the Senate again. And I said to him, Roger, I said, this time listen to the attorneys and don't say anything, because they twisted what he said, made him out to be a perjurer, and now they were going to put him in prison. So here's the thing. Anybody can say anything about anybody. This is an actor right now that he's being accused of women from 10 years ago, Jared Leto. And he's a pretty good actor. And he's saying, and these women are coming up from 10 years ago and say, he made a sexually explicit phone call to me 10 years ago. He's an abuser. You know, he's basically, sexual contact is awful. And you're like, he made a phone call to you 4 years ago and talked dirty to you, supposedly.
10 years ago.
10 years ago. No proof whatsoever of any of this stuff. And now he's being accused of, you know, sexual misconduct by four women in a BBC documentary. And I always say this, and I don't know how to say it in any other way. I'm not saying he didn't do this. I'm not saying any of that stuff. But he wasn't even with this one woman. He was on the telephone with her.
Well, see, and that's the issue you have with this. If you can't even put him
with
at the location of where they're claiming... So he made a phone call to me 10 years ago?
I mean, a police officer gives you a ticket, you know, for a red light camera, and your windows are tinted legally because the doctor gave you the right to do this.
Prescription.
And nobody can see inside the car. Can't even put you behind the wheel of the car. Now you got a red light ticket.
Well, then it's Fifth Amendment.
They can't convict you for
that.
It's
Fifth Amendment.
Yeah.
I'm not going to purge myself.
So I don't know if he did this or not, but what I'm saying is this is that Me Too movement crap. That's what it is. It's like every time you say something, somebody says, when Ted Brewer was in college many decades ago, he kissed me. Well, I kissed a lot of girls in college. You know, I didn't kiss a lot of girls in college. So does that make me a bad guy 50 years later? You're like, yes, it makes you a bad guy. And I'm like, but it wasn't back then. It wasn't like that. You were supposed to kiss girls. Oh, whoa. Did I say that? Now you're not supposed to kiss girls anymore.
It says right here, the committee.
You're supposed to ask permission and get it in writing and get triplicate signed signatures.
I'm still back on this. It says the committee has issued a valid subpoena. The chairman of the committee told Fauci. I'm going back to this. I never got to finish my article in here. It says they requested your presence here. The questions are very pertinent to your decision-making as a head of the NIADA, as well as chief advisor of the problem. The committee is now going to consider after the hearing what appropriate action is going to be taken against you for failure to testify under a valid subpoena on this topic. So apparently they're not done with him on this because of his federal position as head, decision-making head of the NIAID, and that he had a valid subpoena questioning these topics. Apparently it's illegal. You can't be in a position like this in a government power and then you get subpoenaed to answer questions on it and you say, I'm pleading the Fifth. You can't do that. I'm reading the whole thing about it.
Personally, I so dislike Fauci that...
Oh, I hope they figure out some way to get him around.
Honestly. I mean...
Like you said, it's probably one of those, well, we're going to fine you $500 and you have 10 hours community service.
I'm gonna say it this way. If he was on fire on the other side of the road, burning, I wouldn't walk over with a bucket. And I'm giving you a G rating on this. I would not walk over with a bucket and throw it on him.
Of water.
Of water. I said water. And, you know, and so it's just, and I
don't think anybody honestly would. I think the entire country is so nauseated with this fool.
I know so many people that have been hurt with suicide, with depression, with long COVID, with all of this stuff while he was running around telling everybody to wear triple masks.
The psychological gaslighting was on a level unprecedented we've ever witnessed on the American populace.
But it was a beta test.
It was. I mean, when they would come in and they would say, if you don't trust me about the shot, if you don't get the shot, you're a science denier. If you're not wearing three masks now, you're the neo-Nazi grandma-hating killer. Why would you? Do you want to be a neo-Nazi grandma killer? You're like, well, no. Well, you are. You are if you don't wear three masks and get your shot. And you stay 6 feet apart.
That's when they dust off Goebbels and put it up on the corner and say, you know, you're Goebbels, you know, you're a Nazi, you know, propaganda guy, you know, let's make you a Nazi now.
Yeah, I mean,
you're a Holocaust denier.
The random things, and I told you guys this during that period of history. I said what they're doing is this is from a captor torture psychological warfare context. You beat people down psychologically. People don't understand, if you're captive and you're being tortured, it's not always just physical. That's part of it. A lot of it is psychological torture they do to you on purpose in order to break you down, especially if they're trying to get information out of you or trying to get you to do a certain thing. That's what they kept doing to everyone. They kept making it more and more and more psychological beatings, where if you do this for 2 more weeks, we're going to lift everything. 2 weeks would come. They go, sorry, guys, you didn't do it. You can't flatten the curve. You guys aren't good. Listen, 2 more weeks of you guys obeying us, we'll let you out of this. No people, totally no family, lies. No money. 2 more weeks. Two more weeks ago. And they did it for a year and a half. They constantly kept doing that with that goal line. Every 2 to 3 weeks. And the level of psychological beatings in American population.
Damage.
It damaged people much more than anybody even realized. Because a lot of everybody just kind of compartmentalized it. Okay, we're just going to get past this. It was way past that. And so you have to remember, this piece of crap, I absolutely hope they can put some on. What's going to happen now? It's going to be some misdemeanor stuff. It's going to be a slap on the wrist. We're going to say, we made Fauci pay his dues now. He had 6 months of probation.
5 hours of community service. Yeah.
Look what they did to doggone, old pedo boy, as far as over there with Mossad pedo boy, with Epstein. I mean, he gets charged with underage solicitation of minors. That's an actual federal charge. Being a pedo of undergirls soliciting him in prostitution, and he gets 13 months house arrest. And then gets picked up in his private van that apparently had a bed in it. He'd drive around all day, go back to his little spot for 13 months.
No.
Any other person, any point of civilization, they'd be in prison probably 15, 20 years for that. But rules for thee and not for thee.
Well, the crazy part about it is that, see if I'm right on this one. Remember Operation Warp Speed and Donald Trump and Fauci got together in the beginning?
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if Trump will pardon Fauci again.
That would be something.
He'll probably wait until after the midterms. Now Donald Trump's having the military do a big beta test and trying to put together the new draft.
Yep.
Here we go, the draft. And now people are, other people in alt media are calling for Trump's immediate impeachment. And they're warning a full ground invasion of Iran.
I told you this months ago.
And how we're absolutely facing total tyranny. And, and it's true. I mean, we got all kinds of people that have come against us. Now, Tucker Carlson's against him. Candace Owens is against him. Ted Dawson Brewer's show is against him. And I told you guys, and you guys fussed at me, I said, I'm not voting for Trump. And I'm not voting for Kamala Harris. I said, I won't do it. I won't be part of this again. Because he hosed me over with Gottlieb and the FDA back in 2016. I said, that's it. I'm done. And you guys remember that. And you guys all got mad at me. In 2020, I didn't vote for him. He wasn't supposed to win in 2020. Biden had to bring another 20 million illegals in through the Darien Gap, working with Israel. Just thought I'd mention that in case you want to look it up. And so all of that stuff had to come into the country first. Then Trump had to be the big savior and pardon everybody from January the 6th. Because he could have pardoned him before he left. He could have pardoned him before he left the White House.
I normally don't absolutely eviscerate somebody after they're dead. I'm going to do it right now. Oh, and I'm going to do a video.
It must be Lindsey Graham.
It's Lindsey Graham.
Yeah.
There's a video that's been released now. This is basically a hot mic on behind the scenes of Lindsey Graham in March of this year having a phone call with Bibi Netanyahu and asking Netanyahu, let you guys watch it, asking Netanyahu if he wants Lindsey Graham to push Trump to join him in Lebanon strikes to basically take over Lebanon. Not, I'm going to let you guys watch this video a second here. This is beyond nauseating. He goes, well, if you want, I could push Trump. He'll join you in the strikes in Lebanon. You take Lebanon over with you. And Netanyahu even goes, no, we're going to hold off on that. That's going to start a regional broad conflict if you join us in taking over Lebanon. He goes, stay focused on Iran. This is how unbelievably corrupt these guys are and how
AIPAC controls us.
Yeah, and this is why you guys thought in the past I was absolutely way too harsh on Lindsey Graham. Now you're going to know why I talked about him the way I did. This guy was nothing more than a straight-up Israeli do-boy. Anything they said to do, he said, how high, master? How high you want me to jump? What do you want me to do? You want me to shine your shoes for you? You want me to dance for you? This guy's insane.
I wonder who's controlling his Swiss bank account now.
He literally calls Netanyahu baby as soon as he starts the phone call. Hey, baby, it's Lindsey.
He must mean BB.
He says baby.
That's about right. He had a little.
About as gay as a $3 bill.
He had a little fairy wand.
You guys watch this. You guys enjoy it. I'm going to turn the volume up. Have fun with this one.
Baby. Yep, we're good.
Okay. All right. Can I see you now?
Yeah.
Hello.
Hey, baby, Lindsay.
Hey, Lindsay. How are you?
I couldn't. I'm just so impressed. Glad to be your friend.
I'm glad you are my friend.
I'm going to meet with the president this weekend. I'm going down to Doral. I'm going to try to get him to join with y'all in Lebanon to maybe fly some with you. Would you like that?
Yeah, I get that. I think you have a point, but I've been thinking about the other side of it for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concentrating right now on Iran. If we tell Hezbollah that we're going all the way, we threaten them, but if we actually do it,
okay,
then they have no reason not to go all the way against us. And right
okay
now, that's not our interest.
Okay.
We can do it later.
Well, I'll, okay, well, that's actually good counsel. I'll put it out there as an idea. We can always go back to it.
Go all in Lebanon. You want us to fly with you? I mean, you want us to do air raids with you? U.S. military do air raids in Lebanon? He goes, maybe later. This is what the U.S. government has turned into now, is a bunch of do boys for Israel.
I want to say something really,
oh,
really,
trust me,
really
yeah
ugly right now. I'm not going to do it. I try not to use bad language. I do. Now, am
it's
I perfect?
Hard, it's
no,
hard not to.
No, and I know the Bible says should you continue to willfully sin after you receive the knowledge of the truth, and it says by no means we died to sin. How can we live it any longer? But sometimes you just kind of want to cuss, and it's the sad part about it is, you know, we're doing the best we can. That's why I'm so glad God has grace, and I'm so glad that I'm not God, because I am not, neither are you, by the way. And I'm so glad I don't have to stand in judgment of all these people and have to know what their hearts are, because I mean, these people like Lindsey Graham, you got to ask yourself a really hard question right now. You know, is he in heaven? Now, if I was God, I'd give him a go to hell straight card. I wouldn't even bother, you know, not go to jail, go to hell. And I'd say, by the way, you're going to just hop onto the lake of fire. We have a big splash down there with the lava. Have fun with all that. But Lindsey Graham was all, he was a special kind of, now, here's the thing I don't understand. You know, and I'm going to put that, I'm not saying this happened. I'm just saying it's odd to me how he suddenly died. Just gone. Now, yeah, ask yourself a question. Was he written out of the script? Had enough people had enough? Did the little fairy wand thing at Disney World get so many people so hacked off? Did the release of stuff like this get everybody all hacked off? I don't know. Was he really causing a problem for the GOP? I don't know. Now they've got, what, his sister in there? Was it a sister?
His sister that he allegedly adopted when she was like 13 years old because their parents died, that I told you guys, I did a, like a quarter show on it the other day, has virtually no history of anything up until
CIA.
Well, no, it's 2019, and then suddenly she's leading the committee for the blind as the chairman in South Carolina. 100%. No background. Well, by the way, that's like 2019 when she comes on the scene. 2016, they mention her in an article. 2019. She's 62 years old right now.
Nobody's ever heard of her.
Meaning, before she was like 50, she didn't exist with anybody. Allegedly, it was his sister and her husband, who doesn't exist at all. Doesn't exist. Nobody can figure out anything. And I showed you guys how they were building Wikipedia and building content on her over the week after she basically got selected to go into office.
Oh, by the way, U.S. weapons stockpile have continued to dwindle with permanent end to the Iran war nowhere in sight. We warned about this with Ukraine. We started sending all of those weapons over there. Oh, we warned you. We said, we're exhausting our stockpiles with Ukraine. And now we've turned around, and now we've exhausted our stockpiles with Iran. And so now we're in a situation where we don't have the ability, if we have a full-scale war now with another country, to even defend the United States.
That was the goal, bud.
Maybe, I know. But maybe what we have to realize is the only reason that we haven't been invaded at this point anyhow is because of the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. Now, they can be overcome. Because, you know, topographical areas can be overcome, mountains can be overcome, oceans can be overcome, but it takes a lot of effort to do it, a lot. Look at the D-Day invasions of Normandy. That was only about 20 miles across from England, and they had to have this giant flotilla put up and set up. You know, it's not that easy to move troops across the ocean, even today. It takes a lot of work.
Well, especially massive troops.
Well, remember when
massive equipment.
Remember when the SS Normandy was sunk at its pier in New York Harbor during the war? It was going to be used as a ship transport system for troops. And then they said that the Nazis had done it. And then they brought Lucky Luciano back in from Italy to run the ports again, because he was the mob that ran everything over there. And he'd been deported to Italy. And they brought him back in. And that's when the government of the United States went in bed with organized crime. That was when it happened, right there. And it never got back out of it again. That's why you run the drugs, you know, out of Afghanistan into the United States until we discovered what fentanyl was. Now we don't have to do that anymore. So we get out of Afghanistan. Read the book, Operation Gladio. The unholy lies to the CIA, the Vatican, and the mafia. It'll snap you tight. But U.S. weapons stockpiles continue to dwindle. The problem is our weapons production facilities are so antiquated as far as time it takes to build a Tomahawk missile. It's unreal. I mean, we should be able to put those things out in a day, not in a year. And I'm being honest with you now. I mean, so the war effort has not really spooled up yet as far as doing this. Wait until you see the stock for Lockheed Martin, Raytheon go through the roof if this thing gets into a wider conflict.
It's funny, though, you bring that up as far as logistical, as far as with the ocean, because I remember there's an article I'd seen years ago. I just pulled it back up. This is the name that was on Forbes, Logistical Nightmare. Essentially, the problem we ran into getting all the supplies and equipment to Iraq, the Iraq invasion. This is 2003, this article was for the invasion. This, they're going into it. That was the nightmare. I mean, it took like 2 years to build up to that because, I mean, and that was just Iraq. You imagine the level of logistics and planning if, you know, you had Russia or China was going to try to make the mainland of the United States.
And Iran is a lot bigger than Iraq.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so, but you know what's funny to me? You know, Henry Ford, I like Henry Ford, wrote a bunch of really good articles you might want to read about the international banking community. Just thought I'd mention that. And said there's always an international banker underneath every rock. I'm paraphrasing that for YouTube. But here's what it says also. He had a factory up there up in Dearborn, and he actually had piles of sand put out front. Sand. And he had rubber trees brought in. And he manufactured his own windshield when he melted the sand for glass, manufactured his own steel smelters and everything else in there, and manufactured his own tires from the rubber trees, Austin. Mm-hmm. So when they brought the raw material in, it would go in as a rubber tree. It would come out, you know, as a Model T Ford, you know, a few hours later.
Yep.
And he was able to take so what he did, he took all of that supply line and he made it in-house.
Well, and then what happened was they started to grow so fast, they started to expand to have other companies that they would sub out building the parts for. And that's what built that entire area up there as far as the automotive powerhouse of the world when they started doing that. Because now you had all these companies going, well, we'll make you the glass now. We'll make you the tires now. And so you had all these companies that built around Ford that they would sub out to so they could manufacture larger amounts and focus on the processing and the assembly line instead of trying to make parts. And that's why they were able to scale it so big, so fast.
And he was a virulent anti-Semite. Okay? He wrote a book called, you know, the papers are called The International Jew. And he got so mad because he was floor planning his cars through the banks to all of his dealers nationwide. Yeah. He was growing so fast that they came in to try to take over his doggone company, tried to seize it. The international bankers did. And he got so mad at that. From that point on, he was and they were Jewish. And that from that point on, he was an anti-Semite. I mean, he hated Jews. And the thing that's crazy about that, when you think about it, you know, why in the world do these people constantly, and I'm not, and there are other people who do it too, why do they always try to find something that's already pre-existing, that's already been built, that they had nothing to do with, that they finance? Smedley Butler wrote a book, The International, you know, basically it's called War's a Racket. And he said that people are making more money on the Panama Canal. They're never even down there digging a ditch. They're basically financing. They're making more money on this thing than basically the entire people that are out there dying with malaria. He said it's the bankers who do all of this stuff, and it's a racket. Smedley Butler, that, by the way, he was two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner. And in 1933, Prescott Bush, the father of George Bush Sr. and the grandfather of the other George Bush, came together with Smedley Butler, tried to hire him to stage a coup d'etat against Franklin Delano Roosevelt to bring in a fascist government in the United States and get Roosevelt, who was a communist, out of office. And Smedley Butler went to Congress and testified and said, hey, look, this guy's trying to overthrow your government. By the way, that's something you probably haven't heard of yet because, you know, AI likes to rewrite history books. They like to take it, regurgitate it, take it, scan it, and then destroy the original manuscripts. So you can't go back and check it. And they tell you, oh, by the way, this is a new history now. You'll like this. Exactly. Oh, by the way, guys, Google it. See if I was right.
Well, it's crazy. And you brought up as far as Ford. The biggest thing you never realize is that when you sign those loan documents, there's always a little subsection.
Here we go.
There's always a little fine print.
Get ready.
A little magnifying glass. In fact, I've heard if you put a little hat on, the print gets bigger. But, you know, I don't have one, so it's always real small to me. But I digress. And so pretty much they always say in a nutshell is at any point in time during the loan cycle, the bank has the right to call your note. Meaning you owe $500,000 on a house. If they want to, they come in and say, well, you have 90 days to basically satisfy this loan. You know, I don't have the $500,000. I have the house, but I don't have the money. That's fantastic. In 90 days, if you don't have money.
That's a you problem.
Yeah, that's a you problem. If in 90 days you don't have the money, we're seizing your house now. But I've made all my payments on time. Yeah, but the house is worth more. We like it. Actually, you know what? The house is kind of in the way of our beachfront condominium we want to put up. You know, we want to just strip the whole beach done. And we like your house and the other houses. We need to bulldoze them. And so you got 90 days to pay for the house, or we're just going to take it from you.
That's what did to Ford. He had to go to the dealers, exactly, and basically that's exactly what they did.
They tried to call his notes due on the, and they tried basically seize
the company. So all the dealers had to go out and start floor planning their own inventory instead of running it through the bankers, and that's how he got around that. But they tried to seize the whole corporation from him. He was mad boy. Ooh, he wrote a bunch
of
stuff.
That's what they do. Mm-hmm. That's just how they operate. It's how they do things. You can't expect...
Well, it's vulture capitalism is what it is.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You can't... It's the scorpion and the frog. Everybody's heard the story, brief analysis of it. Frogs on the side of a river, scorpions on the side of a river. They're staying apart because the frog knows scorpion stings frogs. Frog's about to jump in the water. Scorpion goes, listen, dude, I need a favor. I need to jump on your back. I need a ride. I can't get in the water. Scorpion's dying in the water.
I want to go to the other side of the river.
Yeah, I need to go to the other side. You're going to the other side. I need to go to the other side. It'd be mutually beneficial. Frog goes, you idiot. You're an idiot. You think I'm stupid? You scorpions sting frogs. That's what y'all do. You sting frogs. Scorpion goes, dude, that's... I don't sting you. I'm not going to. If I sting you, you're going to drown. I'm going to drown. We're both going to die in this. Why would I do that to you? You're not using your frog brain. Think about this. And the frog goes, well, maybe you're right. I guess it's mutually beneficial and it's mutually deadly, either which way. So hop on my back. We'll go. So frog jumps in the water. Scorpion jumps on his back. They're across the river, about 70% across. Scorpion stings a frog. Frog goes, why'd you do this? I'm being paralyzed. We're both going to die. Scorpion goes, because I'm a scorpion. That's what I do. I sting frogs. I can't help it.
It's their nature.
It's what they do. They seize things. They rip people off. That's the only thing they know how to do. They don't know how to produce. They don't know how to build. They don't know how to manufacture. All they know how to do is vulture capitalism. Come in and try to seize things after they've done loans out and do money manipulation with fractional reserve banking. Once I finally understood the concept that it's legal for banking to do 40-to-1 fractional reserve banking, meaning if you've taken your life savings, you have $1 million. It's easy numbers to work with. You have $1 million. You're retiring. You got $1 million in the bank. The bank has the legal ability to loan $40 million in loans off your $1 million. This is what boggled my mind. And I thought to myself, how can they do that? It's called fractional reserve. They make their own laws. And here's the kicker. So when you got your $1 million in the bank and say you got it in a, you know, basically a CD, and they're paying you, you know, 5%. So, you know, you're making your $50,000 a year on your $1 million in the CD. And you're like, yeah, I'll make some money, $50,000 a year in interest. Woo! Well, unbeknownst to you, they're loaning $40 million off your $1 million.
At 10%.
At 8-10% on car and mortgage notes.
That's $4 million a year they're making on that, and they're paying you $50,000. They're making,
Yeah, they're making $4 million in interest. $4 million in interest off their $40 million in loans off your straight $1 million in cash, and they're paying you $50,000.
And they're charging fees on top of the interest.
Yeah. So once you realize, and then they do that, but they do it on a much larger scale, and you understand, you go, they're making $4 million on interest off the loans that they're able to continue to go off my $1 million CD.
I had a friend of mine years ago. They decided to get a home equity line on their house. Now, their house mortgage was paid for. Okay. I know this guy personally, okay? And so the bankers came to him and said, we want to give you a home equity line.
Oh, yeah, of course they do.
And the guy goes, I don't need that. Why? I mean, I just paid this thing off. And they said, no, we're going to give you $1 million home equity line.
Cash.
And we're going to play all the points, all the closing costs. So you'll have the ability at any point in time to write a check for $1 million on your mortgage, on your house.
It was like having $1 million check open.
No. It was basically a checkbook with $1 million.
Then, okay.
When you drew off of it, it was like 8%. Okay. But the reality is you could draw off it anytime you wanted to. So basically, you were signing your house mortgage over to that bank.
Yeah.
Now, I know the person this happened to. And so suddenly, he goes, well, that's a great deal. I mean, I've got $1 million in open capital. I can just do whatever I want to do with it. If I ever need it, I'll have it. It's like an emergency fund.
Yeah.
So that's right. Well, the banker who did it got these trips to Hawaii and Europe, all over the world. He got these big bonuses. And my friend finally asked the person, because he knew her, he said, how'd you get all these trips, these bonuses? It's because of your loan. I got a giant bonus from this and trips around the world from my bank. He'll, how? So it's an open. Oh, no, no. We loaned you out 40 to 1.
Yep.
Your house was a collateral. So we had a $40 million bonus. And so I got to go all over the world to get to travel and make bonus money.
Yeah, because it's the thing. They were making $4 million a year off interest off that collateral.
The loan was good for like 10 years, if I remember right, when I talked to my friend. And finally they came back in after like 10 years and said, oh, we're going to reduce this now. We're going to make it, you know, $400,000. He goes, I'm not interested in this anymore. Just get rid of it. And then they had to basically get the money and bring it back and all the rest. And it was funny because his neighbor had contacted him one day about the house, and his neighbor was a mortgage broker. And his neighbor said, well, I see you have $1 million loan on your house. He says, no, I don't. It's a home equity line. Well, it shows as a loan. It's basically, you know, yeah, collateralized against it. I'm like, well, the guy who owned the house had no idea they had done that. But that's how they do this. That's why she got all those bonuses and trips from this.
Because they were able to loan $40 million out off the collateral on your house.
Well, and the $1 million had like a $10,000 or $15,000 points and all these fees.
Yeah.
The bank ate it. Paid all of it because they wanted to have all the rest of the money coming in every year. So think about that for a second before you start loaning money. Because my dad one time, I was talking to him back in the 80s. My dad was great. And he was alive during the Great Depression. He said to me one time, he goes, who do you think owns all the houses in your neighborhood? I said, well, the people who live there. He goes, no, you're being naive. The banks owned them. He goes, I saw this in 1929. The banks owned the farms because they owned the mortgages. And he goes, and they seized the farms. Thousands of farms were seized all over the country because they couldn't pay the note. He says, my dad had to split the farm up into four or five different kids, had everybody have to come back and work the farm, so he didn't lose it all. He goes, and he said, we saw huge amounts of family farms and homes and estates just disappear, owned by the banks now, collateral. You know, that's how they do. They buy up farmland, buy up farmland, buy up farmland, buy up farmland, buy it for pennies on the dollars. Same thing. Suddenly you have a whole area of Hawaii burns to the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Suddenly.
Except for Oprah's house. And celebrity's house.
Well, you know what's funny about this? Do you remember that one movie, Twisters, that came out a couple of years ago?
The new one, yeah.
The new one. Great movie. Not as good as the original, but really good movie.
Special effects were good.
Yeah, but the guy goes, they were coming in after these twisters go through the areas and buying up the houses and the land for pennies on the dollar. Remember that?
Cash.
Yep. And they were trying to project where they were going to go so they could get in advance and have the teams on the ground to steal the land.
What you do, you do it in an emergency when everybody's emotions are fractured. Mm-hmm.
And that's why, listen to me, if your wife dies or your husband dies or something really bad happens, you don't make big financial decisions.
For at least a year.
I had a friend of mine, his wife died. And he had a place, you know, up in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And after his wife died, the local preacher calls him up. Would you like to donate your property?
I remember you telling me about that. Yep.
Would you like to donate your property to me, to my ministry?
Yeah.
And the guy goes, well, no, I've got like, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars in it. I'll be happy to sell it to you. No, I need you to donate it.
Yep.
This stuff happens all the time.
When people die or when there's emergency or catastrophe.
You don't make decisions under duress. Give it a year.
Yeah,
It's not going anywhere. Let your mind get uncluttered, because when someone dies in your family, a child or a wife or a husband, it messes with you bad for about the first year. Because especially with the first holidays, your first Christmas, your first Easter, your first everything.
Yeah, get through those first.
You got to get through all the first again, and then get stabilized. You got to put cordwood between you and the death. You got to start doing things. Stay cordwood. Activities. You got to put activities between you and what happened. Because if you don't, what happens is you can't dwell on anything but that. You start focusing on that, and that's a bad place to go, because now you're living your life in the rearview mirror. You can't do that. You got to look forward. You can't drive in the car backwards. It just doesn't work. Sooner or later, you're going to hit something. So always allow your goals and your dreams and your aspirations to pull you forward. Don't allow the past to pull you backwards. Really important. And don't make decisions under duress, period.
Face forward only. The analogy with the vehicle driving is incredible for overall life. Analogy, because you go and saying, you know, listen, when you're driving down the interstate, what do you do with the rearview mirror? You glance at it occasionally, right? You see what's behind you briefly, and you stay focused on the road. You need to take an exit, you focus on face forward. Where's my exit? Look in the rearview mirror briefly. That's kind of how life is. Sometimes you got to look back, retrospect, analysis. Okay, what happened? Got it. Now I'm back in the fight again. But sitting there trying to drive down the interstate, put the rearview mirror right in front of you, go, well, I'm going to drive forward while I'm staring at what's behind me. You're going to wreck, and it's going to be a complete catastrophe.
Let me tell you a story. The last time we went to the track, I got to drive that Corvette on the track.
Yeah.
Don't say it's dangerous. I know it's dangerous. I only got to 140 miles an hour. It's as fast as I can get on the straights.
It's a blast.
But it's a blast. But the problem is that Corvette had that TV camera in the mirror.
Yeah.
And it was showing what was behind me.
You flipped that off.
No. I got unbelievably nauseous from it.
Yeah, you turned.
I had to literally come off the track because I was about to puke. because you know, you're going around with these G's around these corners, and I didn't realize I had that camera turned on, and it's so distracting. So when you're looking in that rearview mirror all the time trying to drive, it's awful. You can't focus on your life. You've got to get out there and get away from all of that mess as quick as you possibly can, and that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Well, on the track, you flip the rearview mirror up. You don't even use it. I turn it all the way off. You can't see it. You flip it up towards the ceiling. Use your side mirrors. If you got to see somebody's trying to pass you and you're trying to push them or block them in a corner, but you don't use rearview mirrors at all. Too distracting. You face it forward. You're coming around a corner. You got to cut your line. All of a sudden, you see somebody behind you. You lose your line.
That's why I love the heads-up display on that Corvette I was driving, because it shows how fast you're going in the windshield, so you don't have to look down. So when you're focused on a goal and a dream and an aspiration and something you're doing with your life, stay focused on it. Don't be looking sideways at everything.
Flip that rearview mirror up if you need to. Occasionally, it's not a big deal. Just lock in, stay focused, put your head down, get what you need to get done, set your goals in front of you. The only thing you look at is your goals. Occasionally, again, sometimes you got to go back and retrospect to say, what happened here, what happened there. But flip that rearview mirror, man. Stop staring at it. If you made mistakes in the past, get over them, push forward, learn not to do them again. It's the same thing with health, I tell everybody. You know, you may have done a lot of things bad with your health. You may have eaten a lot of junk food or done a bunch of things. But it doesn't have to stay that way. I've told people that had a problem with alcoholism before. Listen, you may have been a heavy drinker in the past, but that doesn't have to dictate your future. Learn from it. There's so many different supplements on the market that can rebuild your liver. It's incredible. The GHI Cleanse, what I have seen from customers and listeners over the years on how they've rebuilt their liver with GHI Cleanse and liver support and NAC has been absolutely astounding. I mean, the other day, I talked to somebody, and they were a heavy, heavy drinker years ago, and their blood work came back, and their liver values, everything is in perfect shape. ALTs, everything, blah, 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 all the way down the liver.
Healthy liver supports what it's for.
The liver is designed to detox your body.
And the
you
liver
can repair it.
And the liver will rebuild itself.
Exactly,
it's the only
right.
organ in the body.
Even if it's riddled with, you know, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease from high fructose corn syrup you drank the last 20 years, the biggest thing is you have to change what you're putting in it. You can't keep doing it and keep drinking soda and keep drinking liquor and go, I don't know why my liver keeps failing. I don't know why my ALTs are through the roof. Stop what you're doing with it. Do a detox. Get your body cleansed out and start to rebuild it. And I promise you, your energy, your mental acuity, your brain function, your cognitive function, your heart health, everything becomes better with the liver. The liver is the detox organ of the body.
You know, I came across a quote the other day. It said, I'm going to read it to you. This is important. Listen to me. You guys listening? Okay, I need you here.
Focus. Listen up, guys.
Listen, this is important. You can't go back and change the beginning, but you can start where you are and change the ending. I've been thinking about that. What do you think? Change the ending. You don't have to go. You can't go back. I can't go back to being a kid. We're all affected by what happened to us as children. We all are, whether good or bad.
Yep.
We're affected by it. And we're affected by the decisions. In life, we have what they call I talked about this in my first book, Maximum Memory, Maximum Energy. Every once in a while, you come to a crossroad. You're two roads intersect, and you have to go right or left. You have no choice. It's like, who are you going to marry? What degree you're going to major in, if you're going to go to college or not, what your career path is going to be. You only get about a dozen of these.
Trade school.
You only get about a dozen of these your entire life. They happen every few years. You have a crossroad decision. Am I going to do drugs? Am I going to start doing this? Am I going to hang out with these people? And pretty soon you start realizing these crossroad decisions determine the course of your future. So when you come to a crossroad decision, you start over right there, and you can change the ending. You don't have to go back and relive the past again and again and again. It's like I said the other day. You know, I never heard anybody say, I got a lot of laughs on this one, by the way. You know, I never heard anybody say, my life was a wreck, and then I started going to strip clubs, and everything worked out great.
Everything got incredibly good after that.
Strip clubs.
Same thing with alcohol.
Same thing with alcohol. You know, it's, again, three questions. What am I doing? What's it doing to me? And is that okay? That's from Jim Rohn, by the way.
Same thing pharmaceuticals. I've honestly yet to meet many people that have said, you know, my life was just going absolutely horrible. And then I start on statin drugs and Xanax, and everything just got incredible after that. Ever. It's always the complete opposite. So look at what the things you're doing, and, you know, and focus on the direction. You know, in the group chat in here in YouTube, you know, Rick made a comment. He said, you're steering where you look is a natural tendency known as target fixation, meaning your hands subtly guide the vehicle towards your visual focus. 100% right on that. I learned that racing my entire life. Where you look, especially in motocross, where you're cutting through corners, you got lines. You do not look at your handlebars. You don't look at your front fender. You look at where you are going on
same
the track.
Same thing with snow skiing.
Snow skiing. Same thing with street racing or car racing on the track. It's the same thing with life. You look at where you're going. This is why it drives me up the wall. Down here in Florida, everybody loves a rubberneck when there's a car on the side of the road. There's been times where we're backed up 3, 4, 5 miles on the interstate. Stopped. Stop. Not moving. Zero miles an hour. Stop. Stop and go. And you get up to it, and there's a car on the side of the road with a trooper with them pulled over, writing him a ticket. And we've been stopped for 30 minutes. Entire traffic stopped. Entire Florida traffic comes to a halt because you got an idiot just doing something stupid, and you got Florida Highway Patrol that doesn't have the decency to make somebody turn off an exit. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten pulled over, and I take the exit. Or I've done this before. I drive off the road, holding the grass. Cop walks up to me. Why'd you drive all the way over here? Well, because the safety of you and me, and I don't want to be on the side of the road having somebody hit you or me, nor do I want to stop traffic back 10 miles. I don't know. Maybe it's a concept you need to figure out. You're law enforcement. It's not that hard to figure. Why do you want to be on the side of the road at 70 miles an hour?
Well, yeah, what bothers me more than that, and this is a pet peeve of mine, and I'm not going to go off on a tangent on this because I already tangented enough today, but here's the thing. If it's 5 o'clock rush hour traffic and you got somebody who's 5 miles an hour, 10 miles an hour over the speed limit, just let them go. Don't crank. Don't stop the traffic for an hour. I was going to Tampa the other day. There was a cop.
Same thing.
And it was backed up for 15 miles.
Yes.
I mean, stopped for 15 miles.
Exact same thing I just said. Yep.
And I'm like, what is it? And I looked at the person that was with me. I was like, I really hope we'll be coming back through in a couple hours at this thing. And sure enough, it wasn't done yet. It was still backed up.
No.
And I thought to myself, this is awful. I had to take it back. I had to go. I had to take 92 by Plant City and just get off the interstate. Stopped. And you're like, this is awful.
Well, I've had one time a while back ago, I got that. Somebody pulled me over some stupid speeding. I think they had the aircrafts out. And the cop goes, hey, go ahead and take this exit right here, pull it to the side. I want to get both of us off the road. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've finumped the officer here. He's actually using his brain. I'm not going to stand on the side of the road nor sit on the side of the road at 70 miles an hour and stop traffic and cause a hazard and a danger to ourselves. That's very real. Cars are driving by you 70, 80 miles an hour, and you're parked on the side of the road, even if there's not a pull-off. Say you blow a tire.
What if they're on their phone and they merge over, they're on top of you?
Say you blow a tire. Who cares about the wheel? Get off the road. The tire's blown. Get off the road and take an exit. Unless you're in the vast middle of nowhere, there's usually exits everywhere on most of the roads, or a side street, or a gas station, or a building, or a 7-Eleven. Get off the road. I mean, I saw one time, guys over there, he's changing a tire right before an exit. I mean, I'm not joking when I say he's 100 yards from the exit ramp and there's a Lowe's right there. He's on the side of the interstate with tire jack on the car side trying to change a tire. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, I'm sorry you blew a tire. Been there, done that. Drive on the tire another 100 yards and pull into the 7-Eleven. You're not going to mess it up. The tire's already blown. You're putting a spare on.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe I think differently.
I remember one time I was in the motorhome and I had a trailer behind me. I was towing a pickup truck on top of the trailer and I lost a tire. Ran over some debris on the interstate. So I thought, well, AAA come fix it real quick. Yeah, AAA. The guy was so funny. He shows up 2 hours later. Now, luckily, it was late at night, so the traffic wasn't that bad. He shows up 2 hours later, traffic zipping by me at 100 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour. I'm like, this is a nightmare. But luckily, I had the trailer behind the motorhome with the truck on it, so I wasn't really worried about getting rear-ended.
Yeah.
And he comes back and goes, well, I had to finish watching a movie before I came out for the call. He said that.
You never told me that.
Yeah. I was with your mom, and we were stuck on the side of the highway right south of Atlanta.
He said, I have to finish watching
a movie. Yeah, I had to finish watching the movie. He left us sitting out there for 2 hours on the interstate. And then he came out, and then he didn't have the proper trailer with proper tire with or anything else, couldn't fix it. So we had to disconnect the trailer, take the truck off the trailer, hook the truck to the trailer, and tow the trailer to have both of us tow it to a doggone place that we went to Tractor Supply and got a new rim. I kid you not. It was like a AAA. I immediately canceled AAA after that.
Oh, yeah.
It's horrible. AAA is the absolute worst motor club I've ever, ever, ever seen, period.
Well, why don't you tell me how you really feel about it?
Yeah.
Well, and that's why I say, just you use common sense. If you blow a tire, you got to break down in a vehicle. I mean, it's one thing, but most of the time, vehicles give you some type of notice where they break down. And tires, usually when they blow, you got a few distance you can pull.
The reason
off the
I didn't drag that truck on that trailer on the motorhome down the highway to the next exit is because what happens if you blew the other tire? Because it had dual axle. If I had blown the other tire on it, it would have started swerving behind me.
You probably can put your hazards on, though, driven on the side of the road.
Yeah, but if it's doing this behind you, then you got it.
Well, that trailer's big.
Yeah.
That's a big trailer. Would they get really big like that?
No, it was the blue trailer, the original one I had. It was a smaller one. But it wasn't going to do it. But it's just, but it is. Never, I'm not talking about that. I'd get all mad at AAA.
Mad at AAA. Also, too, there's an article that I wanted to cover here. I went into it the other day. Actually, I didn't go into this. This is the one that I wanted to go into. Excuse me. This one that Harrison wrote for me. I was trying to find it again real quick. It says, muscle health is more than protein. New research links vitamin D and folate to muscle mass. Now, I've gotten people where they've asked me for it because they're having issues with, like, malnutrition. Somebody put in the chat earlier with YouTube and asking about high D3 levels of certain things. There's a reason why you need to get blood work done on a regular basis. Every 6 to 12 months on average, if you have something you're really fighting, you need to do it more common than that. You need to see what the base cause is. If you, once you go from there, you kind of have a base to go on, and then if you need to expand and do more digging and do more research and figure out what's going on. But one of the biggest things I've constantly told everybody is inflammation and lack of nutrient absorption based on certain things that possibly may have been done, whether it's toxins you're eating, primarily glyphosate, whether it's a surgery you had. Most things you can start breaking down enough points to get to a root problem. That's always my main basis on everything is I go, what's the root cause of this? And it goes into detail here in this article. It says, why study muscle health before old age? It says, low muscle mass is usually discussed as a problem of aging, especially in connection with sarcopenia. We've talked about that before. Long periods of sitting, limited physical activity, high stress, unbalanced nutrition contributes to problems well before a person reaches old age. Research explained that muscle mass generally reaches its peak around 30 and begins to decline at an estimated rate of around 0.5% to 1% per year. This is why habits and nutritional status established early in middle adulthood influence how much muscle mass reserve a person carries later on in life. This is why I've constantly told people, if you're trying to burn body fat, you're trying to get back in shape, you have to do some type of muscle training resistance.
And you got
to
drop that weight slowly.
Slowly. That's the problem that it rolls back into with Ozempic.
Exactly. Too fast.
Too fast, too much, too lack of nutrients, massive malnutrition, and all of a sudden, yeah, they drop 100 pounds. They also drop part of that 60 pounds of muscle that goes with it, too.
Each pound of muscle burns 50 calories a day for the basal metabolic rate. So if you lose 10 pounds of muscle, you drop your own basal metabolic rate by 500 calories a day. Which means from that point forward, you have to eat 500 calories less per day not to start gaining weight back. That's a problem.
That's a problem. To break that down really slow, because he talks fast and so do I. The more muscle tissue you lose while you're trying to lose body fat, the harder it is to continue lose muscle or body fat.
And your metabolism slows down.
Metabolism down regulates. It goes, well, I've got lack of muscle tissue. My muscle's being lost, muscle loss. I can't keep my metabolism rate to the level it is or else I'm going to waste away and die. So the body, in its infinite wisdom, goes, well, lose too much muscle. I got to slow everything down. Thyroid's got to come way down. Everything's got to go, you know, molasses slow now to try to figure out why the body's losing this much weight this fast. That's what happens with Ozempic, except the problem is the drug will keep it going until you literally just look like skin and bones.
It paralyzes the digestive
tract. Right. So it overrides the body's natural responses. So the body will just turn into skin and bones.
Can't digest your food.
Can't digest your food. And then your hair starts falling out. Fingernails stop growing. That's why when you jump on the, I've talked to so many people, they start on the Ultimate Multiple, they start on the collagen, they're actually eating really good, inflammation's down, GHI cleanse, and all of a sudden they're like, dude, I have to cut my fingernails every 2 to 3 times a week. I said, well, join the club. Just have fun with it. Your hair's got to get a haircut every single week.
Yeah, I mean, that's me now.
Yeah, that's what happens. And yeah, it's annoying for guys. Girls love that factor of it, but that's actually how your body's naturally supposed to respond. Your nails aren't supposed to be brittle and thin and they don't grow and you only clip them once every 2 to 3 months.
They should be talons.
Talons. but so again, this goes into detail also with vitamin D and muscle mass index and why, but everything's got to be balanced. You know, you may have really good high levels of vitamin D in a really high range, but then you're deficient in all these other nutrients. Or, you know, basically your thyroid's stiff, your TSH is super low. You've got to get your metabolism in the right range with proper nutrients, and you've got to maintain it and look at it and do it correctly. There's all kinds to do things the easy way. You're going to take a shot every day, so I'll just eat less McDonald's. It works. You'll lose weight. But after 6 months, you're going to be so malnutritious, your skin and bones, you're not going to be able to do the bar, bitch.
Let me do a real slow version of what I said earlier.
Okay.
You guys want slow? Every pound of muscle burns 50 calories a day for part of the basal metabolic rate. If you lose 10 pounds of muscle, you lose 500 calories a day at your basal metabolic rate, which means you have to eat 500 less calories for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
If you lose 20 pounds of muscle, oh, now you're getting serious.
Yeah.
Now, because your muscles, that's a lot. Now you're going to have to eat 1,000 less calories a day, or you're going to start getting body fat back. Now, remember, you gain the body fat back, but you don't gain the muscle back.
Exactly. And so you cannot build muscle back that you've lost like that without doing extensive weight resistance training.
You can't do it.
You can't do it. If you go, well, I'm just going to start eating more calories. Oh, you'll gain weight.
Fat.
You'll turn into another Michelin man again. And this time you'll have no muscle. It'll be all fat.
And you'll look like Winnie the Pooh real quick. A little humor.
Winnie the Pooh, Tigger 2.
gosh, my, Will.
By the way, I have my friend who basically has the cancer, who they call hospice, and if you want to call hospice for him to die, he contacted me this week. He said he's going to start integrative therapy now.
Oh, praise God. Vitamin C?
Yes.
Okay. Intravenous?
Yeah. And I'm like...
Now, I'm not making any claims about that, neither is he.
No. But now here he is. They're about to call hospice. Well, let me do integrative therapy. Now, I'm glad he's doing it, but he's got so much liver damage now from all the chemotherapy that I don't know what it's going to do, and I don't want to speak negative over him. I hope he lives. But then I said, well, you might want to throw some turmeric in there and some D3. So this guy actually tested his D3.
Oh, so he's
first
got
time, first time. Action. Like no D3.
Like single digit?
Oh, yeah. He's gone. Just whatever.
Gosh.
You know,
chemo wipes the body out.
And no, I warned him. I told him 3 years, what's your D3? Don't know. Nobody tested it. So, but D3, black seed oil, large amounts of turmeric, potassium iodine. Nothing lives through iodine. Nothing can make it through iodine. And those are the things that you need to really strengthen the immune system. And vitamin C orally and vitamin C intravenously. Really, really, really important if you're trying to increase your immune system. I'll say it that way rather than having YouTube censor me. Very important that you do that. By the way, Ben Shapiro's empire is crumbling around him. And this is an article here, and it says, Ben Shapiro, the myth of dual loyalty and the return of the international small hat guy. That's what Henry Ford used to call him. Shapiro's Daily Wire is collapsing, not because of an anti-Semitism resurgent, but because Americans are starting to really wonder out that not everybody wears an American flag is loyal to the United States. Wow. The Daily Wire is coming apart. Good riddance, as far as I'm concerned, ever since they fired Candace Owens. Ben Shapiro's flagship show that nobody really watches anymore, which once pulled several million viewers an episode, now averages about 500,000. I doubt it's even that high. And the only reason it's that high is because, yes, YouTube, I'm talking to you, YouTube, you're the ones that keep his doggone algorithms up.
Yeah.
Because you down-regulated us again. Ben Shapiro's flagship show, which once pulled this, is anything. And so now, anything in the ecosystem of news, the company watches YouTube falls fall 34% a year. Well, how about that? Even YouTube can't keep this little person up. The company has now run two rounds of layoffs in just over a year and has just installed a new CEO to try to stop the bleed. His audience is walking on him in real time. Why? The public has figured out he doesn't care about the Americans. He's only about Israel, just like Lindsey Graham was, just like Ted Cruz is. Now, for some reason, and these guys aren't dealing with this Schofield Reference Bible. That's not who these guys are. They don't really care about the end times and the tribulation. They care about the power, and they care about how much money they're giving through their APAC contributors.
Ooh.
You say, well, you can't say that. Well, then you tell me why Lindsey Graham said they're doing what he was doing with Benjamin Netanyahu. I thought he was, if he could have, I think he'd have kissed him on the mouth.
Oh, dude.
Actually, Lindsey would probably like that.
Dude, he literally asked Netanyahu if he needs to push Trump to join him in airstrikes in Lebanon. Join him in airstrikes. And even Netanyahu, in his infinite insanity, goes, oh, no, that's going to start a more regional conflict. You guys get in that war, too. Focus on Iran. You guys are being good little dogs. You're good. Bark for me when I need you to. But go ahead and keep bombing Iran.
Shapiro is fine with more American deaths. It's acceptable. He'll take it.
I saw that.
He has thought it out. He prayed to his God about this, which is Ein Sof, by the way. And he's determined that more dead American soldiers are a price that he's personally willing to pay. Why don't you take your little meow boy body and your little meow boy personality? I'm about to say something really ugly. Why don't you go pick up a blankety-blankety weapon over there? Why don't you go stand in the trenches? Why don't you go fight some of these Iranian soldiers? Why don't you go do that, you little pencil neck?
Dude, that little faggot can't even run a speed bag. He hit himself in the own face and broke his nose trying to speed bag in the gym. I saw this article yesterday. He goes, a deaths are acceptable, you know, casualty of war. This is what we have to do. I'm willing to allow more people to die. And I'm like, bro, you are about to find yourself in a position when you're out in public, you are going to get your head knocked off by somebody that absolutely hates you. You can't talk like this to the American population when your little little pencil neck skinny ass can't even hit a speed bag, and you're telling the entire country we need to go die for the you in another country because you guys have deemed it so. They're playing their card too hard, is what they're doing.
No,
right now.
Remember that meme we put up? If you're not willing to get in a casket, you're an anti-Semite. Yeah, no wonder YouTube's banning the crap out of us again. We're just telling the truth.
Oh, I got to change time.
Yeah, I'm getting mad. I'm sorry, guys. I didn't do it, but I almost cussed. So I guess I can ask you for forgiveness.
Now, if he had any base, if he was a combat veteran or something like that, and he wanted to say that, I still would disagree with him. Most veterans, none of them will actually say that. Most of them hate war after they've been through it and what they see.
That's right.
But this guy sitting here telling the mayor, it's an acceptable loss of life. Casualties are okay in war. You guys need to keep it up. I'm willing for people to die. God, people nauseate me. Nauseate me.
No, it's unbelievable. Well, you know, Lindsey Graham said the same thing.
No, same thing. Clown show. Why he runs around Disney with his little fairy wand.
You know, I'm not really happy when most people die. I'm not. Because I want to have them have the ability to find Jesus Christ and to get right with God. I really do.
Choices and consequences, my friend.
Okay, but there are several people out there that I'm really happy they're gone. One of them is that Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I mean, there was a giant tidal wave in the lake of fire when she splashed down. And Lindsey Graham, if God's got grace on him for something he did, I don't know, long ago, maybe he didn't make the lake of fire. But, boy, I'm glad he's gone off this planet. There was one other one. Who was that last one who checked out on us, too, that I was happy they were gone? Also, I forgot who that was.
They're so insignificant, I don't remember their name anymore. I know who you're talking about.
But Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and her abortion stance was unbelievable with Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah, see, I truly think unless there's true-hearted repentance. God is a just God. Now, I'm not God. I can't claim to do anything that God would do because, quite frankly, that is way above my pay grade. But I do know this is the fact that God makes it very clear that he's a just God and you will be judged on your behavior and your actions. I don't personally think you could sit there and condone the killing of millions of innocent children and not repent and suddenly God's going to just go, you know what? I just feel bad for you just because I don't know why. You're going to get to go to heaven even though all you've done is atrocities your entire life and you've never repented.
Well, there's going to be a lot of people in heaven that we didn't think were going to make it. And there's a lot of people in heaven that we thought were going to be there aren't going to be there. You know, just the way it is. Bruce Springsteen, hardcore leftist. I used to like some of his music. I really did. Now they're saying he's nothing but a bitter old man. He's being slammed by his fellow rockers for dissing his own country. Here's the thing I'm going to say to you guys. The United States of America is still the finest country in the world, yeah. In spite of us. In spite of our politicians, I've traveled the world. So has Austin. I mean, I've been to 80 or 90 countries and islands around the world. Did a lot of cruises when we first got married and touched all these places everywhere. And I've never seen anything yet that was like the United States. There's one place, Portomont, Chile, that was pretty doggone nice. It was a German colony settled there. I thought I'd mention that. It was really pretty nice. And it was really a beautiful, beautiful country. But I look at this whole thing now and I realize that the United States is still the best place in the world. In spite of us. But, you know, if they start re-implementing the draft, and they start sending our boys over to die in the sandbox.
Somebody told me the other day, because I brought it up to my buddies. I talked to him all the time in Orlando, the one who's all in the AI development. And he said, high probability, because they're putting in the infrastructure, the facial recog, the cameras, the flocks, they want to be able to track down anybody they can whenever they want to. You pump in an entire database of basically draft ease. And you pump them into an AI data system through data center.
They'll find you.
And then you run it through the flock camera system. It's going to be like what China has, what I think, 650 million CCTVs. I mean, obscene amount. They monitor like everywhere. Like there's no areas that are darker.
Remember, the Rothschilds run China too because they control their central bank.
One article I'm going to post this on the site. I'm not going to go over it much right now. We're out of time. Says basically, entire clinical trial results were very clear. Pfizer's COVID shot delivered more risk than benefit. Brownstone Institute now just did a whole entire documentation on it. They pretty much said the entire basis of the 95% efficacy that continued to drop every single week was based on completely and totally misleading information, and it was not effective at all. And the only thing they tried to look at was an immune response in the first shot week, which because they injected them, the body went nuts with RNA gene therapy. The immune system went bonkers. And so it did fight anything it could get a hold of. And then it massively downregulated everything week after week after week after week. That's why people got sicker and sicker and sicker and started catching more and more viruses the longer time
afterwards. Because they put simian 40 in a lot of this stuff, which is basically monkey kidney cancer cells. By the way, we'll talk about it tomorrow.
Yep.
I love you guys. Keep your hearts and minds in Jesus all the days of your life. For he is the author, he is the finisher, he is the perfecter of our faith. And as long as I'm on this show and as long as Austin's on the show, we're going to talk about God and we're going to talk about Jesus. Period.
Amen.
That's all I got to say about that. Off the edge. You almost did it. Almost got
it. It was empty. Threw me off.
Love you guys.
You guys need anything, healthmasters.com. Be sure to check out the specials on sale and leave us reviews. When you like something, let us know. Have a fantastic evening, my friend. We'll talk to you on this show tomorrow, as always. I know, so close.